This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt, Brett here today. Of course, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio. Thank you. The Brett, I will say, you've got your usual visit. He's back. Hooligan was on vacation for how long? He was what, 2 weeks? We didn't talk to him for
weeks. Yeah. A little bit to catch up on.
Must be nice. Well, you know, he comes back today. Got a lot in the reformer today, though, to touch on. That's going to be good.
Indeed.
We will, in the beginning of the 5 o'clock hour, get to the stupidest rocket launch in the history of mankind. All right. We'll get to that. We'll get there.
Oh, I'm just waiting in anticipation.
It was an interesting. We'll save it. I want to start off of. I'm going to get the ugly story out of the way first. I think this is the ugliest story. And no, somehow it's not about some guy being cut up into pieces and dumped into a lake or around the city. Stop it. Dear Lord. I've had enough of those charges by those stories for a while, okay? Can we move on to something else? Here's a cute little story about a puppet dog. You know, can't get those again?
Bears with guns, people. That's what I want more of.
I wouldn't mind that at all. I mean, I'm going to be against arming most of the wildlife. I mean, give them a fair chance. You know, it's a lot better than, as a guy that's grown up around hunters, there is nothing I find more hilarious than you putting a bait pile next to a creek or next to a dump. So some bear comes on out there and just like, oh, look, somebody left some pancakes, and starts eating, and you blast the bear away. But when you pose the bear, are you posing the bear on the pile of pancakes next to the dumpster that you tricked him into eating over there? No, you get the bear up in the aggressive bear pose. And of course, the story becomes embellished. I was barely able to escape with my life. Lucky I got a... No, you gave him some Lego My Egos. Yeah. And then you acted like you're brave. Come on. No. Pose the bear like you did it. Okay. Here's his butt in the air in a dumpster. That's your taxidermy right there. Because if you did that, guess what? They wouldn't want to have the trophy, would they? There you go. And only really those guys that live out in the middle of nowhere in Alaska really are the ones that like to eat bear, you know? You know, those guys, I get that. You know, you don't have a lot out there. You got to go with what you get, and you get an appetite for reindeer, bear, elk, whatever the case may be.
You say reindeer?
Oh, God. Well, you know, not here, but I mean,
who's up there eating reindeer and bears?
Have you seen those people? I mean, I don't watch a lot of cable because, well, repetitive, but it is... There is a show that was on. It's like Backwoods Alaskans, and I'm like, okay, aren't all Alaskans backwoods? Okay, never mind. Never. Isn't that kind of a redundant name? You know, it's oxymoron world. You know, actually, that would be the opposite. Needless to say, no. They had this guy out there. He's like, yeah, sometimes I'm lucky enough I get to shoot a bear, and then I'll have enough meat for the winter. Bear? Now, granted, I mean, you're getting a bear out in the wild. It's going to have not eaten dumpster food. Yeah. You know, it's not gonna be...
I got a big Montana.
Yeah, exactly. You're not getting the Arby's bear. Oh, God. I've been eating beef and cheddars. God, this bear's kind of tangy. No, you're not getting the Arby's bear out there. You're getting something that there. And you want to know the truth is, I can, to a point, get that. I mean, I don't hunt anymore. I got done with guns when I was done with the military. I can get that. I can get you're out in the wilderness. You choose to be out there. That's where you like to be. More power to you. And you live off the land. More power to you. But I always love this guy, like the guy from Eden Prairie. Is like, you know, we were out. I like eating bear. No, you don't. You're just eating it to say you're eating bear. You don't like, just go get Noodles and Company or something like that. Go to Arby's, get your beef and cheddar. That's what you really want, right? It eliminates the middleman with Arby's bear, okay? You don't have to process it through the bear. You can just eat it yourself. Is your tongue tingling?
I might take the Arby's bear over the Noodles and Company bear.
Oh, God. You are actually... That's a close debate right there. That's a close debate. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. No, I'm not gonna read the story about the guy down in Water... Where was this at? He's from Waldorf, but this was down in Waterville where he tried to sneak into someone's camper. I'm not going to do that. You know what? That's just... It is what it is. Drunk guy basically goes out there and beats drunk guy and tries to touch someone's feet. Needless to say, done. Guy's a creepo. He's been arrested. Done. You know what I'm going to start? I'm going to start with some of the stories I actually posted earlier today. Because, all right, I understand. Big white guy from the suburbs. That's Matt McNeil. Howdy. How you doing? And if you want me even more white, graduated at Dinah. 1986, the Reagan 80s. I know. They just love me over there. For God's sake, McNeil. How dare you utter our fine city's name from those pesky little lips of yours? How dare you? I graduated from your school. Come on, back off. I am a white guy from the suburbs. I started to realize how sheltered my life was when I entered into the military and I got around people and Edina in the Reagan 80s raised you to be a corporate executive, you know, upper middle managed to executive level manager at a company. They basically kind of educated you to basically be on a corporate board. And that these other people you see here, you're going to be managing them. So just don't mingle with them. They're the riffraff. That's kind of growing up in Edina. And then trust me when I say this, go into basic training after that. Wow, that is a 160 smack back to the forehead. You will... Ooh. I met a lot of different people from a lot of different cultures and a lot of different parts of the country. And I realized, wow, my worldview was wrong. And it took me a while to kind of start figuring it out because I think for me, there was a lot that I kind of looked around and like, you know, am I really this naive? And yes, indeed I was. It is... And I know I still have a long way to go. I do. You know, you look at the world that's been created for the black community in this country. George Floyd, the redlining, my God. The lack of good quality grocery stores in black neighborhoods. The lack of investment. The lack of quality schools. We have a lot of things we can talk about. And unless you realize not only where the problem came from, racism never really went away. We like to think we did when we got the end of the Civil War. Hey, all done. No. It just got worse. It got dirtier, got nastier, and it still exists in a horrible way today. A la George Floyd and the murdering of all the black people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and across the country, which happens on such a freaking regular basis, it's a travesty. As I saw a meme today, which I really appreciated, you know, how racist is America? Well, when you protest racism in America, people think you're protesting America. And you want to know the truth? That's 100% spot on. It is. You start reading the history of the insane level of disrespect white European settlers paid to the Native Americans. And it becomes hard to comprehend. You try to wrap your mind around it in the kind of idea of the first white Europeans here were the idea was to conquer, and it's not validating in any way. Just that was there was deceit in their minds from the beginning. There was never an intent to work with the native peoples. The native peoples were going to be serving them food or working on their farms. That was what was going to happen. And the native tribes throughout the Caribbean and through the southeastern United States, that's exactly what happened. Wiped out a lot of them. Came into the east coast of the United States, started wiping out the tribes there. Just absolutely annihilating. It was there was intent to get a foothold in this country. And the theme was set. They would write a treaty with the Native Americans, knowing that within, you know, and on the under the argument that we have finally a piece of paper that was going to hold them accountable. That was going to hold them accountable. The U.S. government. And no one ever did. When we tried to, when the Supreme Court ruled against Andrew Jackson, he basically said, you got your ruling, enforce it, and he did the Trail of Tears anyway. The mentality towards the Native Americans is an absolute travesty because aren't we supposed to know better at this point? We're supposed to. We violated treaty after treaty after treaty after treaty, many times with horrific consequences, slaughters, massacres, wars. It usually went the same way. Here is Native American land. Here is white European land. Hey, we'll keep to our side. You keep to your side. And, well, all of a sudden, a bunch of white people start scrambling across into the Native American territory, anticipating the U.S. government eventually invading and taking that land. Native Americans look around saying, you guys aren't supposed to be here. Throw them out or, in some cases, kill them because they're trespassing on their land. It's their land. And white Europeans saying, hey, even though that's not our land, even though we have no authority there, we're going to invade to protect the white people that are there illegally because we can. And seen over and over and over and over and over again. The treaties were supposed to be something resolute. They're supposed to be more powerful than the Constitution. And they are. Treaties are supposed to override the Constitution. And we've actually had a ruling that just happened. This is down in Oklahoma, where the Supreme Court said, no, Native American, and it had to do with law enforcement, Native American law enforcement being able to pull people over on Native American land. And the white people down in Oklahoma are furious because, well, someone actually backed up the treaty and said Native Americans actually have the right to do this. Unfortunately, we live in a world today that still has the mentality towards Native Americans of asking for forgiveness, not asking for permission. And here we are right now with this god-awful idea of Line 3. It's being built. It's garbage. It's just garbage. They're going to pollute the crap out of the state. No, that's not a guess. That's not a thing. They're going to pollute the crap out of the state with this pipeline. It's going to be a mess. We're all going to be, all the taxpayers are going to be on it, but the Native American lands are going to be poisoned. On top of that, there was a story about the Polymet air pollution things, where how much is Polymet already lying to us? The contract they put in Canada is dictating, what, a 4 times larger facility than they applied for here in the United States? So the facility they're describing in Canadian documents doesn't match up with the facility that they're describing here. The facility they describe here is this mom-and-pop organization. We're going out there with a pickaxe and just trying to find, look, a little copper. We're making our way. No. Apparently, they're already anticipating massive expansions for the Polymet project. But when they put in the permit for the air pollution, they put it in for that mom-and-pop organization, which didn't work. The courts just sent that back. And one of the groups that's basically suing to try to stop this is Native American groups. Because Native American groups are still just trying to get their rights. They're still just trying to get their rights, for God's sakes. Rights they are supposed to have. Rights that are in treaties. Rights that is... We basically do the same damn thing that we did in the 1700s and the 1800s and the 1900s as white people. The mentality is, we'll just eminent domain them this time. I wasn't for what happened to the Native American peoples all through those hundreds of years where their treaties were destroyed. I've got a business and I don't want to have to go around their land. So it's just going to be more cost efficient for me to basically just pay off a bunch of politicians to push this through, violate their treaty rights again, only to have someone come after the fact when the pipeline's already built and said, well, you know, you can't stop the pipeline, but they shouldn't have done that. And gee willikers, we're sorry. Oh, by the way, we polluted the crap out of the land. Ta-da! That's just what white people do. And it's not just Republican white people. It's Democratic white people, too. Governor Walz, you're just as guilty in this, and I'm very disappointed. Of all the things, I mean, there's a lot you've done that I've really appreciated. Dude, man, stop this freaking insanity with line three. Stop it. But once again, Native American rights just don't freaking matter. Again. 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 But don't worry, I know. We'll have another Native American recognition week. Oh boy, because nothing makes up for this than basically having a week recognizing the injustice that we just did for them that required us to have the week to have the recognition of injustice, for God's sakes. Oh, hey, you know what? We're going to give you some money for schooling. And that's an education policy issue. Don't try to say, we gave money to Native American schools. Well, you should be giving money to all schools, including the Native American schools. Don't try to use that as cover. Don't go, oh, we're going to build a drug rehab treatment facility up there. Well, that's nice, but that's Health and Human Services. That's nothing to do with necessarily making up for the fact that you once again are violating their treaties, for goodness sakes. It's about, for white people, control. And for Native Americans, it's just waiting for someone to basically say, no, you still have rights. Which, once again, there's a lot of white people, including a lot of Democrats, that when it comes down to it, oh, yeah, I believe in Native American rights. Oh, but, you know, it's going to cost the pipeline company twice as much to build the pipeline around their land. Well, you know, the company, we don't have to respect. We're not for what happened to all the Native Americans all the time. This is just one time. We're just going to do this once. And why aren't you liking this? We'll give you some money. They want their rights. They deserve their rights. For God's sake, they deserve their rights. I don't know how in the hell we are not at the point where we just draw all the Native American territorial land on the state of Minnesota and say, hands off. And when a pipeline company from Canada or a mining company from Brazil wants to come in and violate our land, we look at the map, well, that's Native American land, so you can't touch it. So have a nice day, a great theory, and you can go buy off as many Republicans as you want, but you ain't going to touch that land because it's Native American land. And scene. That's all they want. I'm sure it's nice to have recognition weeks for the injustices, but maybe we should just stop the injustices. We can cut back on the recognition weeks and we just basically respect the frickin' treaties that we have with the Native American peoples and just let them say, you know what? I don't want a pipeline through my territory. And thanks. Appreciate it. All my best. Good luck wherever you're going to route it. Instead, white people live down to the expectations they have for the last 400 frickin' years. Nice job, guys. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I've got the rest of this hour pretty much is all going to be coronavirus. Got a lot to get to with coronavirus this hour as well. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I could listen to Gary Moore all day, man. One of the best heavy metal guitar blues players out there. Absolutely.
Forget the rest of the hour.
Yeah, let it run, man.
Oh, baby, please stop messing around. You're messing around with my heart.
Oh, yeah.
Baby, please stop messing around.
Fortunately, it automatically fades in 5 seconds.
All right, well, we're done, man. Thank you very much. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Don't think I wouldn't do that. Hey, we could do a music show one day. I'll do a music show one day. Why not? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So here's some good news. Yahoo Finance actually had a map out today that they were targeting the Delta variant outbreak areas. And by the way, it really does boil down to Missouri, Arkansas, especially right up on that Missouri-Arkansas border. There's like one or two counties in Arkansas that are unbelievably bad. I mean, as bad as they were last fall and winter. I mean, the southern coast of Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Louisiana as well in there. And then Florida. Florida's a mess too. There are some counties out in the western part of Texas and Wyoming that are really bad. But for the most part, Minnesota's doing okay. The good news is I think it has a lot to do with the fact that I'm praying Brett, I have been consistent. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. I want you to not die. I do not want you to get sick. And I don't want you to have a lifetime of medical debt. And I'm going to get to the medical debt today. Holy God. I got to get to the medical debt a little bit later on. But I don't. I don't want you sick. I want you vaccinated. And once again, when you look at numbers, like for the last 6 months, LA County in Los Angeles has had a 99.8% ratio that the people who have gotten sick and died in LA County were unvaccinated. That means only 0.02% were vaccinated and died, which would tell you that's almost empirical proof. I mean, there is nothing is absolute, but that is about as freaking close as you can get to absolute that the vaccines save lives. And there are too many people that say, see, 99.8% and 0.02%, they're just equal. They're the same. Those are the same numbers. How can you expect that to me to be safe with that? Because they're just bitter, angry people who, frankly, want another major coronavirus outbreak just so they can mock Biden. That's all they want. But I'm hopeful of the mindset that maybe in Minnesota things are starting to change in rural Minnesota. Namely, Todd County was really bad. Was it Stearns County was really bad? There are a few other counties that were still lagging fairly well behind the rest in regards to the amount of vaccines that have been distributed. Minnesota inched closer to meeting its COVID-19 vaccination goal with a 67.9% of those age 16 and older getting at least one shot, the state health department reported on Tuesday. State officials had set 70% as the vaccination goal, but progress toward achieving that mark had slowed as the pace of new shots had decreased. Now, by the way, it should be mentioned, we have achieved 70% on 18 and older. It's just getting the 16-year-olds vaccinated. And also part of this, and I did cross my mind as well when I was reading this story, that part of this might be people thinking about kids going back to school in fall and finally getting that final motivation. I had some neighbors down the street who all of a sudden out of the blue got COVID, and they hadn't gotten vaccinated. And two of the family members got COVID. They've recovered, although the one kid, too, still doesn't have a sense of taste yet again. Ugh, unfortunate. But everyone else in the family is getting vaccinated. So, you know, that could be it as well. That 16 to 18-year-old age group is getting more vaccinated. Last week, 33,428 first and second doses were administered, continuing, unfortunately, a decline in weekly inoculation since at least June 6, although together, though, more than 3.1 million Minnesotans have gotten one dose and more than 2.9 million have completed the vaccine series. The number of new COVID-19 cases is also going up slowly, although not nearly at the pace seen in some other states. Minnesota had the 11th lowest rate of COVID-19 cases growth in the nation, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Case growth is the highest in Arkansas, Missouri. Like I said, it's a mess down there. It's a mess. Who wants to hack your way through a Yakov Smirnoff concert? I'd rather go with Arby's Bear. Ugh. Minnesota Department of Health on Tuesday said it received an average of 208 confirmed infections over the past 3 days. Now, reminder, they have changed their reporting. They no longer report daily on the weekends. So on Tuesday, we get a 3-day total of Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And that number is fairly high. It's a 625, I believe, is the number. So it's a 208 on average over the last 3, bringing the pandemic total to 608,405. State health officials recently discontinued reporting the new cases over the weekend. So the 625 new cases includes numbers from the previous 3 days. The state's pandemic indicators have been slowly increasing. The testing positivity rate, and I'm going to keep an eye on this now, is now up to 1.8%. Up from 1.1% on June 26, still well below the caution level of 5. And I believe, didn't we get, Brett, up until it was like 10? At the worst, it was like 10% of the tests were coming back positive for a few days.
Wasn't that last fall?
Yeah, it was bad. So it's still, once again, that CDC standard is 5%. And pretty much every health agency is around 5%. We're still well below it, but it's going up again. The per capita case growth is 3%, up from 1.7 on June 30th. Minnesota's hospitals were caring for 109 COVID-19 patients on Monday. That's the largest number since June 23rd, but the number of patients that has been fluctuating daily over the past week, the average of 99 people have been treated for complications. One death reported on Tuesday, an individual who lived in a long-term care facility in St. Louis County. There have been 7,639 Minnesotans who have had pandemic fatalities. It still, to my mind, blows my mind that the thought that February of 2020, Republicans in the state of Minnesota would not care at all about 7,639 Minnesotans dying of coronavirus. 7,639 people dying in the state of Minnesota, and Republicans shrug their shoulders saying, yeah, it's no big deal, don't get vaccinated. They're broken people, man. And by the way, it should be mentioned, one of the people who died was a Republican senator who likely got sick at a Republican event that seemed to have been designed to mock coronavirus protocols. Nice job, Paul Gazelka, idiot. Wow. Just these people. Like I said, Senator, he likely got sick. He likely got sick, there's a decent chance of it, at that event. Unbelievable. And reminder, he didn't tell. Then no one in the Republican Party told the Democrats when they started going back to the Senate, oh, we have a major outbreak within our party. Yeah. Tell you what, when we come back, I'm going to give you some sobering numbers from overseas. Holy cow. Plus, like I said, we got to get into the finances of this and also the psychological impacts of this as well. Because, folks, once again, we are at the beginning of this entire crisis. We are going to be dealing with these issues for, my guess is, the next decade. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Great Wall, fantastic. And I highly recommend, go get some of their appetizers and just head on to the beach. There you go. Gold. Just pure gold. EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week. Great Wall is at 45th in France there. Right there on the Edina border with Minneapolis. 952-946-6205. One of the things which is we're going to, when you look at the long-term cases, I mean, we're dealing right now with a lot of people that do not want to get vaccinated. That's creating a current long-term problem where we have people who are unvaccinated who are now getting Delta variants and getting the original coronavirus and other variants and getting sick. That is kind of the current extension of this crisis. That this crisis probably could have been dealt with a lot easier if people just had freaking common sense and actually got vaccinated, treated it seriously, didn't look at 7,600 people dying as some sort of, you know, avoidable number just because it was inconvenient for the narrative for bashing on Democrats. But if we actually had people that were taking it seriously, that would be the, you know, we'd probably be able to get rid of the current thing that's extending out this crisis, which is the unvaccinated. But there are other things which we are going to have to come to agreement with. And I think one of the other ones we're going to have to come to agreement with and come to terms with probably is the best term, come to terms with is the reality is there's a lot of places, including in the United States, where we really haven't come to grips with how many people really did die from coronavirus. I mean, there are some countries, China, of course, they're not reporting their real numbers. Brazil apparently has done everything to try to stop people from getting the numbers. But it sounds like India has done an insane amount of effort to basically try to downplay and dismiss the amount of dead in their country. And the reality is if the culture system, the societal system in India, the caste system, has created a lower class which is so despised by the upper classes that the reality is that many of them don't have even a medical clinic available to them. They don't have medicine available to them. That it's basically they're left to fend for themselves, and it has been a nightmare. India's excess death during the coronavirus pandemic could be a staggering 10 times the official COVID-19 toll, likely making it modern India's worst human tragedy, according to most comprehensive research yet on the ravages of the virus in the South Asian country. Most experts believe India's official toll of more than 414,000 dead is a vast undercount, but the government has dismissed these concerns as exaggerated and misleading. Remember, Modi is their prime minister over there, and he's basically a Trump wannabe over there.
Interesting you brought up Brazil, too. Both those countries have in common strong men dictators.
Exactly.
Like Trump.
They're just like Trump. Exactly. That. Well, I mean, North Korea, you know, Russia. I mean, it's a, that was the template. I mean, that was Trump. Only he was a complete and total moron. And only in it for himself, a narcissist and mentally compromised. But outside of that, he was also a jackass. The report released on Tuesday estimated excess deaths, the gap between those recorded and those what would have been expected, to be 3 to 4 million, to 4.7 million since the pandemic began through the last month. Dear Lord. It said an accurate figure may prove elusive, but the true death toll is likely to be an order of magnitude greater than the official count. The report was published by the Indian government's former chief economic advisor and two other researchers at the Center for Global Development. It said the count could have missed deaths that occurred in overwhelmed hospitals or while healthcare was being disrupted, particularly during the devastating virus surge earlier this year. True deaths are likely to be in the several millions, not hundreds of thousands, making this arguably India's worst human tragedy since partition and independence, the report said. The partition of the British-ruled Indian subcontinent into independent India and Pakistan in 1947 led to the killing of up to a million people as gangs of Hindus and Muslims slaughtered each other. The report on India's virus toll used three calculation methods: data from the civil registration system that records births and deaths across seven states, blood tests showing the prevalence of the virus in India alongside global COVID-19 fatality rates, and an economic survey of nearly 900,000 people done three times a year. Researchers cautioned that each method had weaknesses, such as the economic survey omitting the cause of death. Instead, researchers looked at deaths from all causes compared to the data to mortality in previous years, a method widely considered to be an accurate metric. 4 million. They said that there are parts of India where people were just taking bodies and dumping them. This is the undercount here is undeniable. And we can't in the United States, we're like, oh, how could they? You have Texas. Was it Texas or Florida? They had the rule that basically said if they had a pre-existing condition that was significant, that the pre-existing condition had to be the reason for the death, not coronavirus. That was one of the things they initially had out there before the health agency said, no, we're not doing that, because they literally had someone who died of COVID being officially listed as dying of gout. And they said it was ludicrous. He clearly died of coronavirus. And they said, no, you can't say that because he had gout. He died of gout. And if that's not just stupid people trying to pretend to be their smart, well, and speaking of which, Dr. Scott Jensen. So once again, we have undercounts that are driving down these numbers that are making things bad. We also once again have the people out there whose whole goal it is to, I don't know, kill as many of their constituents and their followers as possible just so they can own the libs? I have no idea. GOP candidate for governor Scott Jensen slated to participate in a virtual event with a group that strongly questions COVID-19 vaccine safety and effectiveness and was founded by a doctor arrested for storming the U.S. Capitol on January 6. Simone Gold, a physician who founded America's Frontline Doctors, tweeted on Monday that Jensen is among the speakers for a July 27th live stream hosted by her group. Don't miss the critical information you need to navigate the deception and confusion of the Chinese coronavirus lockdowns and the derelict public health response. Once again, we have nearly 3 million people fully vaccinated in the state of Minnesota. That's not a derelict public health response. Going back to her thing, content will include brilliant and ethical doctors speaking truthfully and delivering the verified science and data out of their butts. Gold in January was charged with illegally entering a restricted building and grounds as well as violent entry and disorderly conduct for a role in January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. But hey, Scott Jensen loves her. Apparently he's going to speak with her. She told the Washington Post when she regretted being there, saying it distracted from her advocacy work, blah, blah, blah. Jensen, a family physician who served one term in the Minnesota Senate, has come under fire for his continued questioning of the effectiveness of vaccines. He's also a staunch supporter of using hydroxychloroquine as a preventable treatment for COVID-19, despite the U.S. Food and Drug Administration warning it should not be used outside of hospital settings because it could cause heart rhythm problems. Jensen apparently did not want to return a message on Tuesday. Since leaving the Minnesota Senate, the former Chaska lawmaker has announced he would challenge DFL Governor Dim Walz, the governor's handling the pandemic, his main issue. He also signed a lawsuit seeking to ban COVID-19 vaccines in children 12 to 15. Jensen is the sole major candidate in the Republicans thus far. Gazelka is going to run. I got to believe he is. I don't know if Michelle Benson's going to run. I think Michelle Benson has dreams of running as the nominee, as just basically saying, suburban mom, suburban mom, suburban mom, to try to win back some suburban seats. But have you seen your party? I don't think they're going to elect you. It's going to be Jensen or Gazelka. Because there's a real misogyny thing going on the right, in case you're missing it. That's kind of how they are over there. But good luck. No, good luck. Jensen has been pushing. And of course, then there's Mike Lindell. My Pillow guy. I'm serious. If My Pillow guy throws his hat in the ring, I still think he's actually the hands-on likely nominee.
If it comes down to him and Jensen for the nomination, I mean, that's going to be just an insane primary.
Oh, can you imagine what Lindell...
I love Trump more than you. No, I love Trump more.
Well, no. Okay, so here's what would happen. Lindell would never change. I mean, he would be like, we've got the information right here. I got my pillow buddy here. We're going to deliver it coming up here on the... We need full-time coverage. We're going to put Trump back in office. He would never budge. It would be a freaking nightmare for the Republicans, because that would cost them every statewide race, and it would probably, with redistricting, cost them a substantial amount of the House. It would be a nightmare. Jensen is going to be different. Mark my words, the media in this state is going to be freaking pathetic, because the minute, if Jensen wins the Republican nomination for governor next year, what immediately he's going to say is, wait a second. Where did everybody get the idea I was anti-vaccine? Because in case you haven't figured out, the population of the state of Minnesota is 5.8 million people. 3 million people have already been vaccinated, which means you're already on the wrong side of that number. So he's going to have to come out and reinvent himself. Wait a second here. I never was against vaccine. I was just for individuals making their own choice. That's all I was for. And the media that's watched him be part of these kind of events that has basically badmouthed vaccines and told people not to get vaccinated and take, you know, quack medicine are all of a sudden going to be like, well, he seems to have changed his mind now. I guess there's no need to question him. Like, you know, he says he was for vaccines. How am I to question him? I don't know. Read your own freaking media, you idiots. Well, you don't even cover this stuff. So read Minnesota Reformer, you idiots. Read their stuff. They're actually covering it. You're not. You cover it. Look what he's saying, for goodness sakes. But they'll give him the biggest mulligan of all time. They'll give him a huge mulligan, because that's because they want a race. They want the Republicans to spend money in the state. So they'll basically allow a Republican to completely reintroduce themselves as something else, as just to try to keep the race close. So mark my words, keep that out. That's going to happen. Lindell, though. Mike, my pillow guy. Come on, big fella.
Remember, we don't want him to run. He would be a tough opponent for Governor Tim.
Oh, I'm scared to death of him, man. Oh, God. Did I just tinkle myself? I'm scared to death of Mike Lindell. I wish I had one of his absorbent pillows. No, if Mike Lindell runs, Brett, I'm crushed, because that would be the end of Democratic leadership in Minnesota. I'm sure Mike Lindell, that would be everybody. The Attorney General, the Secretary of State, all the races would go Republican. If Mike Lindell, the My Pillow guy, who still thinks that Trump's going to be inaugurated, if he was only to run, boy, oh boy, I hope he doesn't. Wink. 952-946-6205. Back to Jensen. Jensen has lately been pushing back against health advisory, warning people against the highly transmittable Delta variant. Is Scott Jensen like literally just running across the state licking everything? Everything I read indicates the severity of the syndrome is less than the original COVID-19. Well, okay, Dr. Jensen. Well, then I think then if you have no fear, then why don't you go mask-free into a COVID unit right now? You have nothing to fear. Or have you gotten vaccinated? Have we actually seen any evidence whether or not he has or has not gotten vaccinated? Because wouldn't that little nugget really kind of take the wind out of his sails with this whole narrative that he's putting out there that if he actually was vaccinated, that all this is just clearly talk and just kind of made up stuff to basically scare Republicans into voting for him? That'd be an interesting question to ask him. I don't know if there was a news journalist out there that, you know, wanted to ask that question. That might be a good idea. Jensen said, this is like a cold. It's a runny nose, low-grade fever, sore throat. Yeah, just once again, they're still saying that. Medical professionals are warning against the Delta variant now accounts for 83% of the sequenced COVID-19 cases. Virtually all COVID-19 hospitalizations are occurring among people who are unvaccinated. Health officials say 97% of new hospitalizations are among people who've not been vaccinated against the virus. Or as Dr. Scott Jensen says, no evidence. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You know, all those dead people, clearly crisis actors, Brett. Clearly crisis actors. Let's take a break. Come on back. There's the finances. Holy cow. I got to get into this story as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. So there's the long-term, there's short-term effects. You have basically idiots basically still downplaying the virus, which is going to make the virus stick around longer. You have death counts that have been grossly undercounted, which are going to eventually come back, and we're going to find out the truth. The long-term effects of this COVID disease, I had a discussion with a nurse who works in a psychological hospital. Who said that they're so busy that they desperately need beds. They have a waiting list to get in there right now because the mental health consequences of the last year have been staggering. We've talked about the drug overdoses. We've talked about the depression, the loneliness, the alcoholism that has gripped a good chunk of this nation because it's gotten worse in regards to the pandemic, understandably. And on top of it, how it accentuates and makes more severe traditional psychological issues, which have been, a person might have already been diagnosed with. So we are going to be dealing with for years the mental elements of this entire crisis. On top of that as well, this is in the New York Times today, Americans owe nearly twice as much medical debt as was previously known. The amount owed has become increasingly concentrated in states that do not participate in the Affordable Care Act's Medicaid expansion program. New research finds that collection agencies held $140 billion in unpaid medical bills last year. That's just from last year. Examining debts in 2016 estimated that Americans held $81 billion in medical debt that year. The new paper took a more complete look at what patients have outstanding medical debts, including individuals who do not have credit cards or bank accounts. Using 10% of all credit reports in the credit rating agency TransUnion, the paper finds that about 18% of Americans hold medical debt that is in collections. Nearly 20% of this country has medical debt. The researchers found that between 2009 and 2020, unpaid medical bills became the largest source of debt that America's owed collection agencies. Overall debt, both from the medical bills and other sources, declined during that period as the economy recovered from the Great Recession. If you think about Americans getting phone calls, letters, and knocks on the door from debt collectors more often, that's not because of the U.S. healthcare. It's not because of the U.S. healthcare system, said Neil Mahoney, the health economist for Stanford University. The paper's lead author, the $104 billion in debt does not count for all medical bills owed to healthcare providers because it measures only debts that have been sold to collection agencies. Holy God, the increasing number of lawsuits that hospitals file against patients to collect debt, which can lead to legal fees and wage garnishment, are not included in the figure either. You're looking at an absolute economic disaster here because of medical debt, a lot of it to do with coronavirus. And there is a chart here which is stunning. When they talk about how the debt is now being focused in these Republican states that did not do the Medicare expansion, the Affordable Care Act stuff, the if the state did not afford participate, the numbers of debts are dramatically down. Minnesota is in the Affordable Care Act. Our debts, you know, we're part of those states that we were in there. I think we were there from the very beginning. We are part of those states that are the very low, on the very low side of it. But pretty much all the debt that's still left is states that refuse to get the Affordable Care Act, which is Republicans basically saying, we are going to screw over our own state's residents just because we can. Unbelievable. And like I said, the medical debt, the bankruptcies, the lawsuits, the entire family's wealth wiped out because of coronavirus, that crisis will continue for 5 to 10 years. It will be a mess. Lynette is in Chaska. I wanted to get her in before we get to the top of the hour. Welcome in, Lynette.
Yeah, hi, Matt. I just wanted to mention how frustrating it is to talk to someone who believes things that are not... I have a friend that I talked to him the other day about why he's not getting a vaccine, and it's just unbelievable, the stuff that comes out of his mouth. I mean, I don't know where they're learning this stuff. I guess I can find it on the internet if I look. But it's just like, I said, well, what about polio? And he's like, well, polio, that really morphed into Parkinson's disease, and it sort of went away. I don't even know what he's talking about.
Here's what I want you to say to him. This is all you can say to him. This is all you can say to him, because once again, and thanks, Lynette, I appreciate the phone call. All you can say to these people, because the only thing that matters to them is owning the libs, and they think getting vaccinated or acknowledging getting vaccinated is a good idea is being owned by the libs. So they don't want that. So they try to own the libs by denying it. Just say the following things. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt for the next 10 years because you can't afford this. For God's sakes, go get vaccinated. And walk away. And then when they say, poor me, say, yeah, poor you. Hour two is up next. From the Randy Luther Toyo Studios at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Hour two rolling through. Matt, Brett Johnson here with us as well. So Aaron Clems is posting up on Twitter here. Apparently Betty Dangers... This is another one of those places that basically wants to try to play both sides of the coin here. They got $3.2 million in restaurant revitalization funds from the government, $370,000 in PPP loans, and they reopened with an anti-government totalitarian theme protesting government overreach. I'm not going to, I mean, it's been a while since I've been to Betty Dangers. It's going to be a long time before I go back over there. I can tell you that right now. Wait, how much you got? $3.5 million from government money, and you're actually complaining about government overreach. Wow. Wow.
No patience for someone like that.
All right. So earlier today, Brett, we decided to send a giant phallic symbol into space in what could only be described as a giant phallic symbol. Jeff Bezos decided to go into space because this is what our billionaires have gotten us now, because there's no accountability. I mean, you know, used to be they'd always, you know, torment and kill all their employees until they realized their legacy was on the line. Then they start building libraries and art facilities. But today, now it's only about some sort of testosterone-laden fight for billionaires to launch themselves into space because they're idiots. If anything basically gets us to the point where we start realizing maybe we should be taxing these people, I think it's this whole thing. It's just a joke. I was at Rudy Luther Toyota, getting some service done on my vehicle. By the way, if you need some service over at Rudy Luther Toyota, fantastic. I got the deal with my Toyota where I got the service package. So it's great. Go in there. They take care of everything. I had mice that had eaten up my air filter.
Oh, no.
It's like, hey, you got a mouse problem. I was like, all right. Well, they're not coming in the car, I don't think. So I hope they're not anyway. But needless to say, I got the... got the service done. All good. All good. I was there in the service area waiting, and they launched this large dildo shaped thing into space because I was talking about the ship, not Bezos necessarily. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Guys, want to make clear on this? It can go both ways. But at the time, I was referring to the ship. in what could only be described as an orgasmic morning show overload of, he led us nearby. Dear God, I thought you guys pandered to the Kardashians too much. Looking around the room, I was watching as people, because we were busy. Obviously, a lot of people getting service on their vehicle. I watched the people here. If they were 65 and older, they were glued to this. They thought this was great. I mean, they were just, they could not turn away. Pretty much everyone down to about 30 would look up every once in a while and kind of give one of those disgusted looks at the TV, like, oh, God. Just go back to whatever their phone or whatever they were doing. If you were 30 and younger, they didn't even look. They couldn't care less. This is it really is just the patheticness of America on display in regards to Bezos doing this. And by the way, on the backs of his own people.
In the defense of people over 65 in that case, though, couldn't it be a little bit from back when they were younger? You know, it was a big deal to actually watch space launches.
Well, and here's the deal. They think this is going to be like, you know, Moonraker, where there's going to be like a spaceship in space and they're going to be sitting there. And I want to read you this thread. This is just a great thread. If any of you are under the impression, this is from Sim Kern. If any of you are under the impression that our billionaires might succeed in escaping to space while the world burns, let me put those fears to rest with what I know from being the spouse of a NASA. This is a NASA flight controller. For a half dozen people to exist on the ISS, the International Space Station, it takes a ground team of thousands of people constantly problem solving how to keep them alive. All right? Their quality of life is bouncing around in a narrow tube with the same five people who can't really bathe for months. Every minute of their day is micromanaged. Every minute of their day is micromanaged, so they can survive. They follow strict exercise regimens to keep their bones from turning to goo. They spend a ton of time studying systems and conducting repairs on equipment that's continually breaking because space wants to kill you. Their sleeping situation is akin to a floating coffin. Their bathroom situation is a 20-something step process in a porta potty where everything floats and the door is a plastic curtain. The Wi-Fi cuts out on regular intervals. The food is not Michelin-starred, to say the least. The only reason they are alive up there at all is because multiple countries have thousands of brilliant, highly trained engineers and doctors, astrophysicists and computer experts whose full-time job is keeping the astronauts alive and the ISS functioning. When something breaks, as it continually does, the teams scramble to fix devices and solutions. These fixes, let me tell you, they are tedious. This year, working from home, I've seen the schematics and overheard bits of meetings. And the spacewalks where they have to go to repair these broken things, it takes a dozen of hours to study to do each one. And then it's maybe 4 or 6 hours in a suit with a stiff, bulky gloves, all to drive bolt 7A into dock 31X until their fingers are shaking with exhaustion. So there's no future with Bezos and Branson are sipping champagne next to their space pool in low Earth Mar-a-Lago. There's no way life in space could be remotely comfortable or preferable to life on Earth in their lifetimes or for many generations to come or probably ever. The longest anyone's lived in space was Scott Kelly, who spent a year in space, got home, immediately retired. He spent his entire life preparing and training for space, found it extremely physically and psychologically grueling to be up there for just 1 year. So this billionaire space race is nothing more than a blank contest between Musk, Bezos, and Branson. They're not investing billions to forward science or the bounds of human possibility. They're doing it to be the first rich guy to bounce around uselessly up there. And it's utterly despicable when you understand what they're funding it with, is the hoarded wealth of workers who are struggling to exist with ill-gotten money made from supply chains that enslave people and are destroying the future possibility of life on this earth. But if it troubles you that they might succeed, that these jerks might ever spend more than a week in space, enjoy. Let me put your mind at ease, not in this lifetime, not with their buildings. They have no power to make space a better place than it is on Earth. So they can go do this, but she just calls them out. Is that there's no way, it's not going to be, who was the villain in Moonraker? Do you remember that? The guy with the beard.
Oh, I don't know who it was.
There was a second movie with Jaws, but it was at his space station, like he was going to go live up in space. No, that's not how it works. You know, people fall. I think you're right. People have this idea that that's where things are going, but it's not going to get there. I mean, it's going to be hundreds of years before we have anything that's even close to being viable like that. So these guys are just doing this to say to they literally, and her call out is saying, you're destroying the world just so you can get the harness the wealth of it so you can do a stunt like this and act like you're a big deal. If there's anything that tells you you need to just go into these people's houses and start taxing them at 50%, and seriously, 50% for all these people, they're wasting money on such garbage projects. And think about how much money just taxing those three clowns would generate to help out America. Just think about how much money taxing those three clowns at a 50% rate would help America. And I just put every Republican listening into a rage-gasm. It is. Did you watch any of it?
No, I didn't even know it was on.
Yeah, there you go.
Even if I did, I would have gone out of my way not to watch it. What an absolute waste.
It is. And to watch the TV morning show is just all pander. We were there. Were you? Were you really there? We were there for the opening of the Arby's. That was down the street, too. That's about as big of a deal, if you want to know the truth. Closer beef and cheddars, Bezos and a rocket. You tell me what's going to affect you more often. What, good and bad. Good and bad.
That's a great one.
You, of course, our good friend Patrick Cooligan is back from the Minnesota Reformer.
Indeed, he is back on the airwaves today as we're talking through Minnesota politics, the John Thompson situation, obviously, which you addressed earlier in the week. We'll also touch a little bit on Scott Jensen going to his anti-vax thingy, lack of a better way of putting it, as well as some other stories as well. So that's what we got.
Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer, kind enough to join us today on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon as we're joined by Patrick Cooligan, our usual Tuesday guest, as he makes his return. Patrick, of course, is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. For the latest in Minnesota news and politics, make sure you follow them over at MinnesotaReformer.com, as we'll be talking through some of the latest Minnesota news today. Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Good to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start off with a big political story in Minnesota that's really dominated coverage for the past week or so, and that has to do with DFL state representative from St. Paul, John Thompson, who right now, I guess, technically speaking, is not in any sort of legal jeopardy, but when it comes to political jeopardy, he's facing a lot of issues as questions have been raised over domestic abuse allegations and also his residency and whether he lives in that St. Paul district that he represents. Already, Governor Tim Walz, Speaker of the House Melissa Hortman, Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent, and the chair of the DFL party, Kent Martin, among others, have called for John Thompson to step down, but thus far he has refused to. So, Patrick, I want to first tackle this whole residency issue and whether John Thompson actually lives in the district that he represents, because Dina Winter, of course, one of the writers for the Reformer, talked about how basically there is a loophole in Minnesota law where all candidates have to do is check a box on a form when they file to run for election. And if they check this box, they get to avoid putting down their address. And 13 members of the legislature did so last year. So it's kind of interesting. A lot of people probably don't know this, but it basically seems like we have an honor system when it comes to whether our elected officials actually represent the districts that they say they live in.
Right. And there's an interesting Twitter exchange about this just earlier today. The Minnesota Republican Party tweeted out something about Thompson's residency issues, and a Republican state legislator named Jeremy Munson, who's part of this kind of breakaway Republican caucus, there's four members, a little bit harder right. But often in a contentious relationship with their fellow Republicans, he said, be careful, Minnesota GOP, because there are people on our side of the aisle who maybe don't live in their districts. And I think he's insinuating someone who's long been thought questioned about his residency, and that's House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd, Republican of Crown and or Zimmerman, whichever one. He's claiming now. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely an issue where we don't necessarily know where they're spending all their time. And in order to find out, it can be really difficult. I mean, we use public databases like LexisNexis and White Pages and so forth, but it's hard to get a definitive answer about where somebody lives. And I, we wrote a story about Senator Julie Rosen last summer about this issue. She was renting a tiny shack in her district, but we knew of a large home, well-appointed home that she lived in the suburbs, or she spent time in the suburbs. And it's like, well, how do you determine what residency is and prove that somebody's living in their district or not? Obviously, Thompson here in this case, he has a driver's license in Wisconsin, so that's certainly a red flag. On the other hand, he's registered to vote here in Minnesota. We checked Ramsey County public records, did a public records request that came in today, and Dina Winter, our reporter, found that he has is registered and has voted in Minnesota elections. He's registered at that address, the address in his district. Interestingly, he did not vote in 2018. Not sure why, but it's a hard thing to figure out whether or not somebody's actually living in the district they represent. One would hope they would.
Well, in the case of Senator Julie Rosen, at least for me, gee, if I'm sitting there thinking, do I want to live in a 680-foot square foot rental home in Vernon Center or a $1.3 million 5,700 square foot home in Mendota? I'm thinking it's probably this one, but as you brought up, there are a lot of challenges when it comes to trying to figure out where our members of the state legislature actually live, since for the most part it is an honor system, and that is an interesting thing you brought up, how Republicans are saying, I don't know how much you want to necessarily go after this, since there could be members of our own party who are having trouble with this, and especially when, according to Dina's reporting, 13 people checked that box saying that they get to avoid putting their address down. So it is a very messy system, it sounds like, for both parties, and I kind of wonder if, especially with Thompson's story really gaining a lot of traction in the press locally here in town, if we could have some changes to that system maybe in the future.
Yeah, I expect that you could see some legislation that would require something a little more solid and give the public a little more access. At the same time, we have this kind of new phenomenon of protesters showing up at lawmakers and elected officials' homes and protesting. And I've decried that behavior on both sides. I don't think that's appropriate. And I don't think it's fair to the elected official. That's an issue too, is how much access do we want to give people to the people's home addresses and that kind of thing. But overall, I think we just need a good way to verify that somebody's living in their district. We don't necessarily have that right now. When I was at my previous job at the Star Tribune, I actually pitched, I had suspicions about a legislator, and I told our photo editor we should put a camera across the street, monopod or a tripod. And just take a photo every day and see how often the lawmaker was there. And the photo editor rightly said to me, that seems more like surveillance than photojournalism. I thought, oh yeah, that's true. That really is kind of surveillance. But I only say that because it just points out how difficult it can be to prove whether or not someone lives in their district.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to John Thompson, not only have we had questions about his residency, and just to back up for a second, I wouldn't blame someone like him for not wanting to necessarily have his address out in public for the reasons you just brought up a few moments ago with the rise of protests at lawmakers' homes. I don't necessarily blame them in that instance, but you would think there could be a way where they could put down their address and give the Secretary of State a way to verify that they actually do reside in the district they represent. But that'll probably be something for a future legislative session to try to tackle. But going back to John Thompson and now a number of DFLers calling for his resignation, to me it just seems like the biggest issue with him is that this guy just really is struggling to keep his story straight in terms of residency and talking about the traffic stop that he had, which kind of was the spark for what we've been seeing with these news stories, and then the domestic abuse allegations saying that some of those police reports may have been falsified. To me it seems like the DFL leadership has kind of grown tired of him with his ability not really to keep his story straight or to get a straight answer on any of these questions.
Yeah, and I think he probably could have survived the residency questions, but the real problem is domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And these incidents are really disturbing, and they happen in front of children. They involve him in a couple of cases exposing himself. The problem is that there's only charges in one of the cases, and obviously he's innocent until proven guilty, and he is his attorney. He has not really spoken. It's been mostly his attorney. In our case, we talked to his spokesman. And so it's not as if he's been convicted of anything. But the details of these police reports are really jarring. And there's certainly a long history of the police and prosecutors doing a very poor job of getting justice for women who have been victims or survivors of domestic violence. So I think when you see domestic violence cases that did not lead to conviction, I think for people who know a little bit about the criminal justice system and that history of sexism and misogyny, I think that's we would look at those police reports differently than if it were a different kind of crime.
And final question on what happens with John Thompson. What could happen next with him in the state legislature, whether it's somehow trying to force him to resign or also facing ethics complaints? What are we hearing at the legislature in terms of next actions that could be taken against him?
Well, I have a pretty good relationship with DFL lawmakers, and certainly one of them, a Twin Cities progressive, has no interest in talking about this. And I think those are the folks who could make this happen, who could really force him out. If they, you know, kind of like Barry Goldwater going to the White House in during Watergate, a presumptive ally saying, you know, it's over here. I also have not heard back from the speaker. So certainly there could be an ethics case. He can be expelled with a 2/3 vote. That is not the way they want to go. But they also don't want to be going into the 2022 election with John Thompson as a kind of a figure that can be used by Republicans in the same way that he was in 2020. Mm-hmm. And they feel like they lost legislative seats because of how they were viewed as anti-police in important suburban districts.
Well, it's interesting, too, as Kurt Dowd has kind of been walking back a statement saying that he was going to look at filing an ethics complaint, saying he would only do it now if the DFL fails to act. And I imagine they're probably sitting there in Republican quarters thinking, well, his district is very heavily DFL, so there's no chance they would be able to pick it up if there's a special election. But you also hit the nail on the head that he is a big fundraising foil for Republicans. So, yeah, while they publicly need to say we want an ethics investigation, there's probably part of them that are thinking there, too, that, well, he could be a powerful fundraising tool when it comes to the 2022 election cycle.
Yeah, Republicans would love to see him still there and still using the megaphone that he has to say whatever he wants to say.
Yeah, absolutely. We're speaking with Patrick Coulican. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota politics. A couple more stories I want to get with you on, Patrick, before we have to wrap things up today. And I want to stay in the political realm with Scott Jensen, one of the Republicans seeking the nomination for the party for governor in 2022, as he is slated to be at a virtual event with a group that questions vaccine safety. That's founded by a doctor, Simone Gold, who was arrested for storming the Capitol on January 6th. So, in other words, Jensen is going to be showing up at an event promoting largely anti-vax theories, and it's going to be with someone that stormed the Capitol on January 6th. So, to me, Jensen really seems like a guy who is running hard for the primary, but not so much for the general election, as I'm sure this could probably be forgotten by 2022, but that's not exactly a good general election stance to be putting out there, that you're going to be speaking at an event that features someone that was at the January 6th Capitol attack.
Right. But on the other hand, I would say you can't win the general election unless you win the primary.
Exactly.
I think what this reflects is real. He does seem to have an idea of where that Trump base is. And they are, as has been shown in the last several months across the country, that they are the most hesitant to take the COVID-19 vaccine, the most open to information about the vaccine that it casts it in a negative light, misinformation, maybe disinformation. And also the move that we've seen in the past few months, since January 6th, it was, Trump had nothing to do with it. And then it was, it was Antifa. And now we've basically come full circle where it's, they were in the right, and the president himself has painted Ashley Babbitt, the woman who was killed by Capitol Police as she tried to get into the House chamber. As a kind of martyr for the cause, and that apparently is where a relatively significant piece of the party, that's where they are right now. Is it enough to win the nomination? I think that's an open question. I think there's still a lot of Minnesota Republicans who are just not on board with that. And in the suburbs where the bulk of the Republican electorate is. On the other hand, if you have a big enough field, maybe this is there's a plurality that allows you to win the nomination. And then once you win the nomination, then you can pivot to the mainstream. There's a lot of Minnesotans who will never have heard of Scott Jensen once the general election starts. And, it could be an off bad year for Democrats. And you can adjust your strategy and your tactics once you win that primary. And the other thing about Jensen is he's the only one in the field. So, I mean, of the main candidates, every day he's out there raising money, calling delegates who are going to be at the Republican convention and give him the endorsement, and making appearances, getting his name ID up inch by inch. I'm a little surprised we have not seen any other Republicans get in, because, you can't beat something with nothing.
Yeah. And we are starting to reach a little late on the timeline in terms of deciding to run for governor, since typically, at least in the modern political era, typically you want to decide the summer before the election year that you're going to be running for higher office. So remains to be seen if Paul Gazelka, among other Republican names, will be entering the race. Final thing I want to touch.
I'll
go ahead, Patrick.
What they should realize, I mean, Gazelka, Michelle Benson, no one knows who they are. Mm-hmm. And even among convention delegates, they don't know them very well. You really need to get in and start raising money and getting yourself known.
All right, Patrick, final story. I just want to briefly touch on you. That is an opinion piece that was put in the Reformer today, written by Tawana Black and Brett Grant, talking about the lack of equity legislation that was passed at the state legislature, being that Minnesota is one of the states that struggles with the gender gap when it comes to education, home ownership, and way too many other categories. And just briefly, one of the stats that really caught my eye that they brought up in that piece was something from the Federal Reserve that showed if we had closed racial gaps in earnings, hours worked, educational attainment, and employment, Minnesota's gross domestic product would have increased $6.6 billion annually between 2005 and 2019, which equates to about $92 billion in lost GDP during this period, an economic loss that, of course, hurts all Minnesotans. So if you weren't able to follow along with all those numbers, basically the lack of really getting equity legislation and equity policies in Minnesota is hurting us not only morally, but also in terms of finances. So I thought that was an interesting piece that was written today in the opinion section of the Reformer.
Right. And that's something that I think that we can expand on in the future, and that is that our inability to close these gaps is hurting all of us. And that Fed study, I think, points to the fact that we just have this untapped potential with a large group of our fellow Minnesotans. And if we could start closing those gaps, those folks would fill a real shortage we have of labor that is holding back our economy. We just need more workers, and they're right there, but they're just not ready, or we're not doing enough to bring them into the fold, not just of the labor force, but of those high-skilled jobs that where employers really need workers. And in turn, we are losing out on a lot of aggregate demand, as economists would call it. It's wages that those folks could earn and they would spend in the economy, and that would be really good for everybody. They would also improve our tax base, that which we could lower everybody else's taxes, or we could spend on whatever we want. And so, yeah, that's untapped potential. And with the legislation that they are referring to, they had hoped passed, would that every time we pass some kind of legislation, we ensure that there's some analysis of how it would affect our racial inequalities. And in the same way that we use at the legislature, they have what's called a fiscal note. So every time there's a piece of legislation, there has to be an analysis of how this would affect the state budget. And I think it would be a valuable tool to get some important policies moving at the legislature, but the Senate Republicans blocked it this time, so it's not going to happen, and I don't expect it will happen anytime there's a Republican that control any either chamber of the legislature. So it's another reason to focus on 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would think something might have been able to happen in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, but unfortunately, I didn't see a lot of action in that area. So as you said, yeah, probably going to come down in 2022. That's been Patrick Koulikan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com and check out all their latest work, including what's been happening with the John Thompson situation, Scott Jensen speaking with this anti-vax group, and of course the opinion piece talking about the equity gap in Minnesota over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, as always, appreciate the time today.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
All right, we'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
Uh-oh. Looks like someone's joining us on the camera. If you want to watch the radio, it's radio for your eyes. You can. I have no idea why. I started in this when you have microphones. But apparently, we got to multitask. You can watch the live stream of the show. It is on Facebook at AM950 Radio. And, of course, Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. Someone has stopped on by. You can see them on the camera. Thanks to Patrick Koulikan. Always a very solid interview. Nice long one, too. He didn't cut corners there. Nicely done, sir. Absolutely fantastic. Nice to have Minnesota Reformer on the air. And if you're not reading the Minnesota Reformer, you're wrong. They got great stories in there and just amazing writers, too. We've had numerous ones on the air with us because they are putting out the best news out there. And you want the difference? Okay. Andy Mannix, great writer over at the Star Tribune. Andy Mannix is a great writer at the Star Tribune. He does what should have been the beginning of a series of stories on the mysterious destruction of evidence at the second precinct on the night the third precinct was burned, and has the Star Tribune just buried that story. That should be the beginning of an investigative series on what in the world happened, and instead Star Tribune is basically running away from it. I guarantee you, Reformer would have done first of all, would have done even more work on the original story, and it would have been the beginning of a massive investigation. And so, you know, Minnesota Reformer, that's where you want to go. And they've done so many great stories there. It's just amazing.
Why cover that when Bezos is going to space?
Bezos in space. Hey, look, Bezos. You want three signs the world is healing, that the country is healing after Trump. Our friend, Roops with the Scoops, Aaron Rupar, of course, who writes for Vox now. And back in the day, we started him off right here, City Pages guy. And he is so much better. We are so beneath that dude at this point. We are so low on the rung of the ladder. Rupar is fantastic.
You should get him on like once a year, though.
I'll get him on before too long. Rupar joins us occasionally and does talk about things. He actually had a story that apparently Biden had a cabinet meeting, and funny, he did not make all of his cabinet officials point at him and praise him during said meeting. How nice. How nice. Number two, the Hall of Presidents at Disney World has decided they've introduced the Biden automatronic robot president.
Oh, this, I hope it looked better than Trump's.
Oh, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. It, well, Trump's looked like a, you know, a bloated Muppet.
Yeah, he had really red lips in that, didn't he?
The best is they clearly went to all the presidents around him, like, who in the hell is this guy? Their facial expressions, every time they showed Trump speaking in the Hall of Presidents at Walt Disney World, look at, like, Lincoln and Harding, and they're all around him like, who in the hell let this guy in here? They all had a facial expression that even robots realized that was a bad idea. Ugh. Now, I have no idea where they're moving Trump in that. Could you put him in the bat men's room? Hello, I'm Donald Trump. Oh, okay, I don't have to go now. The third thing that the planet is healing, the country is healing. Today, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Super Bowl champions, went to the White House. Did you even know that they were going to be going?
I did not know.
I had no idea until all of a sudden I saw a news story saying Tom Brady was actually making jokes about, you know, about Trump's loss, which I'll have to go check that out a little bit later on. But they went to the White House. Did you hear of massive amounts of people saying, I'm not going to go? I mean, you know, you had people that were not going to go because of Trump was there. You had people that weren't going to go because of Obama there. Just people went. Apparently most of the team went and met with Biden and did what is one of the things which is an easy layup of a president is meeting a sports team that won a national championship.
And he didn't cater it with Burger King either.
Oh, God, that was the most unbelievable. The pictures of him sitting with, like, the Lincoln China and silver out there with big piles of freaking Big Macs and acting like he just did something good is one of the wildest things. I always love the guy that tried to do the guy that takes care of the silver saying, sure, I guess we can use the Madison silver for the dipping sauces. And the best part of all is, as he's acting like this is a great thing, I don't know if you remember this, but was the team that came in, the college football team, I think, that came in and had this monstrosity of a meal, said the same thing. Everything was ice cold. That had been, they literally had must have put it out, taken, just set up the photo op so Trump could take all the photos, and then just left it there. And so when they got in there, everything was ice cold. So they got an ice cold. Can you imagine?
Who wants an ice cold McRib?
Well, I don't think they had the ribs. I think it was just like Big Macs.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they wouldn't order the McRib. No,
he would have just taken that entire tray and gone to his bedtime cheeseburger happy place, man. That's all he would have done. But no, that was one of the wildest images. I remember seeing that. And it's like, how is this real? How is any of this real? It's like seeing the president eat a bag of Funyuns. You're like, what am I watching here? Funyuns are delicious. Just the most, that, but it's healing. We didn't hear anything about it. I am going to go out on a limb here. That Joe Biden, he might have gotten him ice cream, but I guarantee you they had a pretty good meal with the White House chef prior to the ceremony with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Can you imagine what those guys put down for food? Holy cow.
Oh, God, yeah, trying to feed an NFL offensive line. Have fun.
So those huge steaks. Here you go. Fred Flintstone steaks. Oh, they'd love them. Oh, I guarantee if he did that one time, and there wouldn't be a team that would miss it. There wouldn't be a team that would miss it. It'd all be there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. For the final part of the show today, I want to, you know, we talk politics, we talk things. I talk a lot of other things, too. We, of course, have arts and music and stuff like that on. But I also sometimes, every once in a while, like to stumble into the realm of parenting. Because I am a parent. Ta-da! That's right. I know. Three kids. You've heard them on some of the ads that we've done here. The last year has been, it's been interesting because when you're a parent and you think about raising kids, you have to kind of factor in the changing world that we live in. I'll give you a great example of this. I watched this holiday season, the movie Die Hard, with my kids. For the first time. And we said, is this a holiday movie? And then we had a debate afterwards whether it's a Christmas movie. And it's a very good action film. That is a, you know, it's a very good action film. There is this scene at the beginning where Bruce Willis, and I remember this as a, when I saw this, I think it was like 18 or 19 years old, where he comes into Los Angeles and there's a woman wearing skin tight pants, and that's supposed to be risque. It's at the airport at the very beginning of the film before he goes over to Nakatomi Plaza. And there's, you know, she's wearing skinny pants, and they're supposed to be like, oh, I can't believe LA. Look at them. They're just like, it's like the most timid. I mean, every person today, you go to a Trader freaking Joe's, every person's wearing yoga pants. You know, it's not one of those things where it's outrageous anymore. But you, as a parent, you can, I remember my parents like, I can't believe they put those images in the, I can't believe that. But today, it's nothing. As a matter of fact, I've had to learn how to kind of, you know, swallow my true feelings about clothes or the things like this. I've had to do that. Things change. And with that, the challenges of phones has been a mighty one. And I've talked about this as before as regards to parenting goes. The hardest path to negotiate as a parent today is how much online, how much glowing rectangle, and that's the best way to say it, how much glowing rectangle time do you allow with your kids? I'll get back to this in a second. Let's get to Jennifer in Minnetonka. Jennifer, she wanted to chime in on the Hall of Presidents. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Say, I saw a TikTok, not that that should be any arbiter of, you know, accuracy, but that they anticipated Hillary is going to win, so they already started to make the animatronic figure for the next president. When it turned out to be Trump, they had to make a few alterations. And if you look at it, it does have this flavor of Hillary.
Oh, it does a little bit. I'm not going to deny that. They must have pushed it out from the inside, though. Thanks, Jennifer. I appreciate it. The animatronic Trump at Walt Disney World. If you look at it, I mean, so they must have. What did they do? Did they put, like, you know, a massive balloon into the frame and just kind of inflate it to kind of get it, you know, porked out a little bit? Hey, I've got some size on me too, but at the same time, they're being generous with that animatronic animal. I always will forget. I don't know if you remember. I went to the Smithsonian back in 2017. This was right after Trump took office. This is right the Scaramucci thing. I was in D.C. where Scaramucci had his 9-day reign.
Oh, nice.
I was there. It was like, it's the Smithsonian. Scaramucci gets canned. I was like, well, I don't think he's going to get a wing in this place. You know, I think Bert and Ernie are safe. You guys can keep them there. And you went in, and they had the pictures of the presidents, and they had put Trump's up, and Trump was this angry, bitter-looking photo next to a smiling Obama. It was so hilarious. I'm like, gosh, the Smithsonian's even trolling the dude. No one likes the guy. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. I'll come on back. I want to have the last segment of the show. I want to talk about the impact on kids in regards to glowing rectangles and how we, if you're a parent like myself, this is one of the most double-edged swords that you will ever come across. We'll talk about that when I do return. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Back to the parenting topic. This is a Washington Post story, and I'll post this later. I know it's got a paywall, but it's a good story. It's interesting for sure. If you're a parent like me, the hardest challenge that you have is allowing your kid. What is the right amount of social media time, social media sites? You know, what is the case? And I have always been in the mindset, and I don't want my kids to be a pariah per se, where, you know, a great example is when my kids were younger, you always have this noble idea. My children will watch 10 minutes of TV a day, and that's it.
That's what, like, every new parent says. Exactly. Yeah. They're going to read for 4 hours and only watch 5 minutes.
SpongeBob's great. Put on SpongeBob. The kids are great. Now, and I will say this. We did kind of cut it off after maybe an hour sometimes But and especially when the kids were younger, because of the amount of research where if you just leave a kid in front of a TV for a long period of time, that actually does hurt their developmental stages. So when they were, say, 8 and younger, there was a limit that if they got an hour earlier, they were reading books that night, or they're hanging out in the backyard with the dog, that sort of thing. We were pretty good on that. But the idea of like 10 minutes of TV, I realized that every kid, and you know, my oldest is my son, every kid in his grade was, you know, already talking about SpongeBob and these things. And so by not allowing him to watch some of those things, it kind of turned him a little bit into a pariah to a little point. I mean, I'm not questioning. Some parents do not want their kids to watch TV, and I can completely understand that. But I didn't. That was the decision we made. All right. And you make your own call. This is not about one way or the other way being the best. But when it comes to social media, because that's the thing that I've noticed as a parent in the last 20 years, is that it's changed. It was cable TV. It was, you know, the, you know, SpongeBob and stuff, but now it's all social media. I remember the first time we were at our cabin and I got a notification that we were about to go over on minutes. This is, you know, about 8 years ago. And it's like, wow, how in the world are we about to go over on minutes? My son was watching, was streaming on satellite, not on Wi-Fi, on just streaming entire baseball games. And he'd like watch the Twins game and then go watch another game. And I'm like, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. No, stop it. Because that became the replacement. There are some just absolute garbage social media sites that I'm very hesitant to allow my kids to get involved in. And whereas I have been smart enough to stay away from them. And I don't, you know, track my kids on social media. My wife does. My wife does have, you know, kind of keeps track of them a little bit. Doesn't follow them. Is not posting on there. For God's sakes, don't do that. But, you know, we kind of keep an eye on things. But one of the things that's always been a case is the idea that for my kids' generation, these glowing rectangles are their primary window into the world. But once again, as I mentioned, it's a double-edged sword. This is a story. Loneliness among adolescents around the globe has skyrocketed since a decade ago and may be tied to smartphone use, a new study finds. In 36 out of 37 countries, feelings of loneliness among teenagers rose sharply between 2012 and 2018, with higher increases among girls, according to a report released Tuesday in the Journal of Adolescence. It's surprising. This is from San Diego State University lead author Jean Twenge, T-W-E-N-G-E, a psychology professor at San Diego State. It's surprising that the trend would be so similar across so many different countries, said Twenge. On the other hand, if this trend is caused by smartphones or electronic communication, a worldwide increase is exactly what you would expect to see. In an earlier study, Twenge had identified 2012 as the year when smartphone ownership passed 50% of the United States. Before 2012, loneliness and depression had been unchanged or down for years and decades. But in the early 2010s, loneliness and depression as well as self-harm among teens, sharply increased in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. According to studies in the worldwide study, school loneliness was not correlated with factors such as income inequality, gross domestic product, and family size, but it correlated with increases of smartphones and internet use. It's been an interesting year, to say the least, as my children have had a pandemic year, have had to interact with many of their friends almost exclusively online. And even when they're not doing school, that's been the primary mode of communication. One of the things that we have done, and I've actually been happy with, is especially and my wife has been a big part of this, is encouraging my children to get back out with friends and do things with friends now that things are open, even if it's a friend that wants to wear a mask. Because I think that, once again, if there's an interesting element of this story, and I'll post the whole story because we're getting to the end of the show, I'll post the whole story. I think it's worth a read, especially if you're a parent. The idea that we give the kids the carte blanche to use these glowing rectangles to keep in touch with people, but the downside is that that's not real communication. That's not really doing anything. You're basically just sitting on your caboose looking at a glowing rectangle. And that's pretty easy to see how loneliness can really start to creep in, because the glowing rectangle is really the only friend you got. And so, I look at this study as a warning sign that if you're a parent today, that, you know, letting your kid have some time on their phones or their social media sites, I mean, that's understandable because that's how a lot of them communicate with each other. But make sure, my suggestion would be, is part of this is actually stepping away and actual physical interaction with other kids. Because I think these consequences, if we just stay in this pattern, it's going to be bad for a long time to come. Native Roots Radio, they're up next. Have a great one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.